episode of the Decide Guys Football Forum is coming in right at you. I am your host, Umar Desai, joined by my co-host, good friend, Tad Desai. And Tad, I mean, we got breaking news as before we even started our podcast. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready. Hit me.
So the Seahawks, they have acquired Jamal Adams. I mean, we discussed this in our first episode, just possible destinations as to where he was going to go. And yeah, the Seahawks have acquired him for... They traded away Bradley McDougal, also a first-round pick in 2021 and 2022, and then a third-round pick in 2021. And then in exchange, they get Jamal Adams and the Jets' fourth-round pick in 2022. How do you feel about it?
You know, it was funny. I kind of looked at this trade. I was like, okay, I get it for both sides. We talked about Jamal Adams' trade destinations in our first episode, and the Seahawks were on that list, and it was funny. I listened back to make sure I wouldn't contradict myself, because that's something I do a lot. And we literally only spent like 30 seconds on the Seahawks, because we kind of were just like, yeah, we just don't see it really happening. But I like it for both teams. Obviously, Jamal Adams did that expose with the New York Daily News, I believe, where he just eviscerated Adam Gase. And that was very clear of... that relationship with the team is over. So there was basically a 0% chance Jamal Adams was coming back if he did play out this year with the Jets. So take what you can get. And for the Seahawks, I'm a little mixed on it, because I get why they made the move, but I don't see Jamal Adams really being the big player that makes the difference. And that's not a move I can see with Seahawks being like, oh, well, now they're Super Bowl favorites.
Yeah, it was an interesting move. I mean, over the past couple weeks or so, there was lots of rumors going around that Seattle and San Francisco were sort of front runners to acquire Jamal Adams. I didn't think it would happen this soon. Part of me felt that they would wait until the season started, and then in case players contracted COVID or something, then it's like, okay, let's make a move. Or depending on how competitive they are as far as playoff implications or things like that, then they'd make a move. So... yeah, we didn't spend a ton of time on Seattle because we just didn't think that was the thing that was going to make them, you know, super competitive all of a sudden. I mean, yeah, Jamal Adams is going to be a good pick, and he's going to make that defense better. But overall, I mean, this team goes through Russell Wilson, and if he plays well, they're always going to be in contention for a playoff spot and possibly a division crown. So the nice thing is they got Jamal Adams for 2 years now. He plays out his contract. They could extend him. They could let him go, similar to Jadeveon Clowney. Yeah, overall, it's a good move. I mean, as we talked about, there's lots of crazy offenses, which San Francisco's offense and Sean McVay's offense in Los Angeles, and obviously Kyler Murray and Cliff Kingsbury's offense. So it's a good piece and could definitely help them contend against these passing offenses in the NFC West.
Well, so we talked about when discussing the Seahawks potentially trading for him, was the Seahawks are terrible drafters. They just do not draft well. So getting rid of those draft picks, I really don't think is a big loss for Seattle. And I've seen a lot of people online kind of criticize the Jets for, well, these picks aren't that valuable. They're only, you know, going to be in the 20 to 32 range. But here's the thing, if you're getting two first-round picks, that's still pretty valuable. And I know I have a buddy who used to work in the Rams front office when they were still back in St. Louis, and he basically told me straight up, once you're past the 20th pick, most NFL GMs consider those draft picks second-round picks, just with a higher contract value. But at the same time, that's still good value that you're not getting anywhere else. Like, if I'm calling up Washington Football Club or whatever the hell their name now, or, you know, the Carolina Panthers, someone who I'm expecting to drop into the top five, I'm not expecting them to give me two first-round picks. So if I have a team call me up, I don't care if it's that late in the first round. That's still two first-round picks. I get the criticism for a lot of Jets fans, and we should have held on to him, or we should have fired Gase, which, by the way, I think Gase is going to be gone at the end of this year anyways. But where the situation has ended up, this is basically the best-case scenario for the Jets. You got good Hall of Draft picks. You got rid of – I won't call him a problem player, because I think Jamal Adams is not like an Antonio Brown type of guy. But you got rid of a unnecessary drama. And you know what? Just go into this year, just tank, see if Darnold's worth it, and then just kind of see what you got.
Yeah, well put. So yeah, just in case you missed it, Jamal Adams is now a Seattle Seahawk. Jets get 2 first-round picks for him, and yeah, we'll move on with the show from there. I mean, kind of had to adjust for that, but Tad, you got something to say?
All right, so I want one prediction from you. I'm putting you on the spot here.
All right.
Give me your projected NFC West standings, and we will get into this more in depth in the following weeks. But for now, I'm putting you on the spot. Give me your NFC West standings.
Now, are you talking about just placement, or do you want records too?
Let's just go placement.
Okay, placement.
We'll save the records for when we do our deep dive.
Yes, that is coming. So I like the move, but I don't think this makes them a front runner to take the crown. I mean, I know it was competitive with San Francisco down the stretch. It came down to game 256. That was an iconic game, obviously. But yeah, I don't think it was a move that's going to, you know, all of a sudden make them the front runners to win the NFC West crown. I think Arizona's obviously going to be in contention. San Francisco defending NFC champions already. So yeah, I know it may be a homer pick, but I'm still picking San Francisco to take the crown behind Arizona, then Seattle, and then finish with Los Angeles.
Okay. I honestly think I may agree with you there.
Well, there you go. Two hosts that agree on the same NFC West rankings, but
always makes for good radio.
But as mentioned, we'll have a deep dive on all divisions. That's coming up in the next couple weeks, just as Tad teased. But let's get on with today's show. Today's topics will include, with training camp just around the corner, we're going to cover, review the draft again, just go over some value picks that happened in the first couple of rounds and also some reaches that happened in the first couple of rounds, possibly even slide in some late round picks, day 3 picks, and undrafted picks. We'll go over the draft, and then our finishing segment is we'll go over just veteran breakout players and veteran disappointing players. So who in 2020 will make that next step and become a premier player over the course of the season, and who will take a slide based on a previous strong performance in 2019. So, Tad, you ready to move on now?
Let's do it.
All right, let's jump into it. So, as mentioned, with training camp right around the corner, we wanted to dive into the NFL draft and just sort of revisit some of the value picks that happened in the first couple of rounds and some of the reach picks that happened in the first couple of rounds. So, we'll start with value picks. We'll start on a good note. So, Tad, who were some of your players that you felt were good value picks in the first 3 rounds of the NFL draft?
So I'm going to keep my top value pick a surprise for when we discuss it later. But as for, you know, the first round and second round, I go guys like Tristan Wirfs to the Buccaneers, DeAndre Swift to the Lions, Grant Delpit to the Browns, Trayvon Diggs to the Cowboys. Even as a Cowboys hater, that was good value. There's just no denying that. So I got those, one player in the top 10 that I will tease, and then another 2 players in the third round. What about you, Mer?
So I only went about 3 picks for each for values and reaches, but I got CeeDee Lamb as a value pick. I mean, he just absolutely slid to the Dallas Cowboys. Patrick Queen also slid to the Baltimore Ravens. And then in the second round, A.J. Epinesa for the Buffalo Bills. So, yeah, those are my 3 guys that I got for value picks. So you got any deep dives on any of your players as to why you consider them value picks?
All right, so I will go ahead and just reveal my biggest value pick. I cannot believe. So to give people a little behind-the-scenes look, I gave Amir the first chance to choose his value picks, and obviously I was aiming for CeeDee Lamb. Like, that is just objectively the best value pick of this entire draft. It's like, okay, CeeDee Lamb's there, and I was like, all right, maybe Patrick Queen. Well, he took Patrick Queen. I was like, okay. And I was like, all right, well, one of my backup options is Epinesa, however you pronounce it, to the Bills.
Epinesa,
and I was
yeah.
Like, yeah, yeah. And I was, and he took that too. And I was like, all right, well, okay. And I looked, I was like, I can't believe he missed this guy. Tua, I'm going to try this. Tagovailoa.
I believe I did that right. I think you got it right.
Tua Tagovailoa. At number 5 for the Dolphins. That value is insane to me. Had Joe Burrow not had one of the most historic seasons for a college quarterback ever, I think it would have been totally plausible for the Bengals to take Tua at number 1, even with all the injury concerns. I think that's why and people tend to forget this, the days leading up to the draft, there are all these rumors of, are the Chargers or are the Dolphins going to trade up with the Lions, go up to number 3 to try to, you know, hopscotch each other for Tua. Like, there were all these huge rumors Dolphins did the smart thing. They stayed put. They said, we're going to see what happens. And they got their quarterback in the future. Like, people forget, tank for Tua was the entire mantra for the Dolphins season last year. Like, it wasn't like, hey, maybe we can win some with Fitzpatrick or, you know, any of this. It was tank for Tua. Like, literally, we want to lose for this guy. They didn't have to give anything up for him. They sat there. They got him. And, okay, let's assume his health concerns are validated, which I don't think they are. He's gone through so many physicals at this point that I think he's going to be cleared to play this year. If that's, you know, if that happens, it's up to the front office and coaching staff. But if they don't, then they have Ryan Fitzpatrick, who, okay, fine. He's your very prototypical bridge quarterback. That's what he's made his living off of. So I believe that Tua at number 5 was easily the best draft value pick behind CD Lamb. What do you think?
No, you make a strong case for it, but I guess for me, I'm thinking about it, and if Joe Burrow doesn't have the season that he has, and it's, you know, kind of more neck and neck between Burrow and Tua Tagovailoa as far as who's the best quarterback, part of me thinks Cincinnati just goes defense, and they take Chase Young number 1 overall. Like, I understand everything that's going on with, you know, people saying that Tua Tagovailoa is hurt, but then he's showing videos that he's not so hurt. So, I mean, he probably could start the season if a team really wanted him to, but that's not a risk you want to run. Whereas with Cincinnati, they made lots of key offseason signings on the defense, and I think they could have just rode another season with Andy Dalton and or drafted a quarterback possibly in the late first. They could have traded up from that 33rd pick and drafted came back into the first round for a late round pick and picked somebody else up, like a Jordan Love, and or, you know, if Justin Herbert was still sliding, maybe something like that. But yeah, part of me felt that if Joe Burrow didn't have the season that he had, I mean, you have so many storylines where it's just like he's going to stay in Ohio and play for Cincinnati, the hometown team, and all these things where it's like you don't have that with Tua, so maybe they'd reconsider and they take Chase Young number 1 overall. But I totally get your valid points. I mean, that makes a ton of sense as to why Tua is a value pick at number 5, because, I mean, he's an ultra-talented guy who I think he'll be healthy and he'll be good to go. You know, they'll probably let Fitzpatrick start a couple of games, but yeah, COVID just throws a wrench into so many things.
It really does. Well, but, you also have to remember that there were all these fears too that could the Washington Football Club, I think that's their name now.
It's club or team, but I mean, close enough.
Yeah, whatever. Just Washington.
Yeah.
Could they? There were a lot of fears, especially within the Miami and Los Angeles Chargers fan base, of could they just give up on Haskins right away and draft Tua number 2? Could it go Burrow Tua? And again, that speaks to just how talented Tua is. Even with all these concerns, people were so scared that Washington was just going to bail on their supposed quarterback of the future after one very limited year, as the Cardinals did with Josh Rosen. So I think that really speaks volumes just how talented Tua is. And the fact that he fell to number five, like, that's crazy. That's insane. So I just hands off to Miami. They had an A-plus offseason. We teased this plenty in the first segment, but when it comes to grading each team's offseason, Miami is probably going to get an A-plus for me whenever we get to the AFC East.
Yeah, they definitely did a good job building a team out there, and, you know, Brian Flores and just the team is in a good spot to compete soon. I mean, I don't think they'll compete as hard in 2020, but very soon, as they move into Tua. So, yeah, Tua's a very good value pick. I'll jump into mine, as mentioned. CeeDee Lamb with Dallas, I mean, as mentioned, this is just an ultimate, I think probably the best value pick in the first round. I mean, there was talks between Henry Ruggs, Jerry Jeudy, and CeeDee Lamb as the top 3 receivers in this class. I mean, there's lots of rotations as far as who was number 1. But for the fact that at 17, at a mid-round pick, Dallas didn't have to trade up or trade down or anything like that, for CeeDee Lamb to just fall into place for them is just, like, ultimate value. He added another playmaker with Amari Cooper, Michael Gallup, and Ezekiel Elliott. Lots of targets are going to be vacated. I mean, Randall Cobb left in the offseason. Tavon Austin left in the offseason. Jason Witten left in the offseason. They vacate 190 targets. So, I mean, maybe even with COVID stuff, Lamb is still going to step in and be a day one difference maker. Maybe he's obviously not going to take all 190 targets. That's going to be split between Gallup, Cooper, and CeeDee Lamb. But it wouldn't be out of question to see him getting close to 100 targets in his rookie season. Also, you throw in the fact that the Cowboys offense was one of only 7 teams that threw for 30 or more passing touchdowns. They averaged 37 passing attempts and also 297 passing yards a game. So, big fit for them. They're going to be dynamic. It's going to be very hard for opposing teams to stop this sort of offense now. Moving into Baltimore's pick with Patrick Queen at the 28th overall spot. Arguably the best inside linebacker in this draft class. I mean, it was between him and Kenneth Murray as far as who would go first and who would go second. Patrick Queen, I think in my book, maybe takes a slight edge over Kenneth Murray, but I mean, like I said, you can argue either case. Ravens had a bit of a hole at inside linebacker, and if anything, Patrick Queen now slides in, makes that one of their more stronger position groups. I mean, you add him onto a team with Calais Campbell signed in the offseason, Derek Wolfe signed in the offseason, they have Marlon Humphrey on the team, Earl Thomas is on the team. So, I mean, they're going to be loaded on defense, and I mean, this guy is going to be able to learn from a lot of veteran players and understand the position and possibly be their future, you know, Ray Lewis at the position. I mean, they lost Ray Lewis, but he's a guy who could possibly, I mean, I don't know if he'll exactly replicate everything that Ray Lewis was able to do, but he'll come close. Had a great year
Way to set realistic expectations for the rookie there. That's very fair to him.
Yeah, because I mean, Ray Lewis, I mean, obviously just such a hell of a player, but I mean, Patrick Queen can come close to him, if not just show shades of what Ray Lewis was able to do, but maybe not at that same level. But you never know. We'll see. Had a sensational year, his final year at LSU, besides obviously winning the national championship. 85 total tackles, 12 tackles for loss, 3 sacks, 1 pick. They're playing in a defense with lots of good running backs. So Nick Chubb, Kareem Hunt, both with Cleveland. You got James Conner in Pittsburgh. You got Joe Mixon in Cincinnati. LSU had the 21st ranked rushing defense last season as far as yards allowed per game. So when you're going against strong runners like that, it helps to have a guy who can help stop the run and, you know, force teams to pass more. And then obviously you got the secondary behind that to help support that. And also let's remember that he went to the same school as the number one overall pick and former Heisman Trophy winner Joe Burrow. So you're going to pay Joe Burrow twice a year for almost the next decade possibly. So now you got some intel as far as possible tendencies. Help the Ravens defend better against Cincinnati and Joe Burrow. So, I mean, it's a good fit. But, I mean, Ted, do you argue anything against Patrick Queen?
I mean, I agree with most of your points, but like giving intel on Joe Burrow, like, come on, that's like Trent Richardson be like, hey, I know I get to Greg McElroy. Like, that's just, no, like, that's not how that works. I think Queen is a great pick for the Ravens. I think that was great value, but I would argue that the expectations are a little high for him. What it reminds me of a lot is when the then San Diego Chargers drafted Manti Te'o, and everyone was like, oh, this is the next, like, he's gonna be like the next break, because that's what people were saying, undersized linebacker, very instinctual. And Te'o's ended up having a very solid NFL career. He has not, I don't think, I wouldn't qualify him as a bust, but at the same time, I think lowering expectations for him a bit, I think it, and this is where it's funny, is certain franchises, depending on the position you play, the expectations are so much higher on you. Just because Queen is going to the Ravens and he is a middle linebacker, people are like, oh, you're the next Ray Lewis, where if he was going to, I don't know, the Colts or, you know, the Titans, people would be like, oh, okay, that's a very solid pick. But people expect this greatness out of you. That's pretty unfair. So I agree that Queen is a great value pick. I could not believe he slipped all the way through there. And I liked Murray more than him, so I understood why the Chargers took him before Queen. But at the same time, I think people just need to temper their expectations with that a little bit.
Yeah, no, that's a very fair point. And as mentioned with COVID, I mean, lots of these things, who knows how much time these rookies are going to see, how quickly they'll adjust to their new teams and the new schemes and everything. But yeah, as hit the nail on the head right there. Just excellent value pick. Last one, as mentioned, was AJ Epenesa with the Buffalo Bills. Projected as first round talent. A lot of people were expecting him to possibly go in the late first round, possibly to like a Philadelphia, maybe Baltimore, Seattle, like lots of those teams at the end of the first round. But he slid all the way to the almost to the end of the second round, 54th overall. He joins a very stacked Bills defense. They were second in points allowed, 3rd in yards allowed, and 10th in turnovers. So, I mean, they're really good defense. Such a loaded group over there. I mean, they got, just on the front line alone, they got Mario Addison, Ed Oliver, Jerry Hughes, Star Latulele, Vernon Butler, Brian Cox Jr. If you throw in the other great defensive stalwarts that they have, Tre'Davious White, obviously, Jordan Poyer's a great safety. They signed Josh Norman in the offseason to, you know, hopefully sub in on different packages. Micah Hyde, they have Tremaine Edmonds as an emerging linebacker. I mean, they just got such loaded talent. So once again, similar to Patrick Queen, AJ Epenesa can come into this team, learn from lots of these veterans, and join a loaded group and just make them better. He still needs to work on a ton of things. I mean, he's not a completely polished edge rusher or defensive end, but immediately he could come in and be a pass rusher specialist. He's got the tool set. He's got quick hands. He's got a nifty bag of tricks as far as getting to the quarterback, but overall, I mean, there's still a lot of things he can learn, but he can be a promising player within the next season or two.
I agree. That was a great pick. That was a guy that I actually wanted my fan favorite team, the Colts, to get, and I'm glad he landed in Buffalo. I think that's a really good situation for him. Going back to the first round, though, I think you missed another huge value pick with Tristan Wirfs at number 13. The Buccaneers have Tom Brady, who we'll get into this later, but I'm concerned about his longevity. I am very interested to see how he does this year. And the Buccaneers, looking at the roster, there are two big holes, running back and offensive line. And I could not believe that the Buccaneers got Wirfs at number 13, because I personally thought he was the best tackle in the draft. And he went after Andrew Thomas and after Jedrick Willis, who, okay, I can see the argument for those two. And then he also went after Mekhi Becton, which, I mean, the Jets are going to Jets, so that's going to be a thing. So I think that was an absolute home run pick for the Buccaneers. You get your tackle of the future, because even if Brady leaves after next year or 2 years from now, Wirfs is going to be the anchor on your line for years down the road. And that is so important. You look at, I know he's not a tackle, you look at guys like Quentin Nelson. Like, having, or, I'm blanking, the tackle for the Dallas Cowboys. Help me out.
Tyron Smith or Lyle Collins?
Tyron Smith, thank you. Tyron, exactly. Like,
they got a lot anchor, of them.
That was, yeah, no, exactly. But the Cowboys are a big example of how a good offensive line, a good foundation, can lead to prolonged success. So this is a very good first step in that process. The other one was DeAndre Swift to the Lions in the second round. I loved that pick. My father is a Detroit Lions fan. He's been depressed for many, many years because of it. And I told him, I was like, you guys are having a great draft, because you look at the Lions' depth chart before the draft, it was Kerryon Johnson and Bo Scarborough. I know Bo Scarborough's, you know, undrafted. He had that one really good game last season and was just kind of solid. But still, Kerryon Johnson, Bo Scarborough, that's a pretty solid depth chart. You add DeAndre Swift into that? Dude, that is a very, very well-rounded running back depth chart. So if Matt Stafford can stay healthy, I think the Lions offense could end up being a really, really powerful force. So my last few value picks is Grant Delpit to the Browns. I couldn't believe this. I honestly couldn't. I thought Delpit was a first rounder for sure. The safety out of LSU you talked about with Patrick Queen, is that LSU defense was insane. And even it was crazy because I didn't think Delpit was going to go to Cleveland, because they are so set at safety. They have Carl Joseph, who, well, I think is a little overrated coming out of the Raiders system. I think he still has some promise. They have Andrew Sandejo, who I think is the epitome of a just solid safety. So you add Delpit to that. Well, if Delpit ends up being, you know, what I think he's going to be, great. Put him in the starting rotation, and then you have Sandejo or Joseph in the behind him. If he turns out to be a slow learner, then yeah, put him behind them. It's a perfect situation. Trayvon Diggs, Stephon Diggs' cousin, I believe, or brother.
Yes.
From cousin?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, there we go. From Alabama, cornerback to Dallas. Like I said, that's another guy I thought could have gone in the first round. Great pick. I think he and Adoobie will just be a great tandem in Dallas. I know I mispronounced that. Leave me alone.
Chidobe Awuzie, I believe, is his name.
I'm not even going to try that. And then for third round picks, you have guys like Josh Jones, who's the tackle from Houston, who was drafted by the Arizona Cardinals. Very similar to the Buccaneers, the Arizona Cardinals, the biggest need on their roster is to beef up that offensive line, especially when you're trying to grow Kyler Murray. I saw a lot of rumors that Josh Jones was going to be a first rounder. I did not think that should have been the case. I'm glad it wasn't. I think the third round is exactly where he should have gone because he is this huge physical specimen. I think he's around like 330, 6'5". Like, he is your prototypical NFL tackle. He just needs some time to learn. So I think Arizona is the perfect case for that. And my final value pick is Terrell Lewis. No, at number 84 to the Los Angeles Rams, they lost a lot of talent at linebacker. I think they have enough where he isn't, you know, doesn't have the pressure to be a starter, but he can still get enough play time in. And I mark my words, 3 years from now, Terrell Lewis is going to be, at the worst, a solid starter for the Los Angeles Rams.
All right, those are solid picks. Let's move into some of our reach picks. I mean, these are some players that...
Despite my many mess-ups there.
Well, just name mess-ups as far as not your analysis mess-ups, so I'll give you that one.
I appreciate that.
Let's move into reach picks as far as just players that maybe went a little too high, maybe got, you know, drafted by a team that needed to fill other holes. I mean, there's a whole mess of reasons as to why we are classifying these guys as reach picks. Tad, you want to jump into your reach picks?
So the first reach pick I had was, and you can always count on this team for a reach pick, the now Las Vegas Raiders. I used to love Mike Mayock's analysis. Like, what is he doing? It makes no sense to me. So before we get to the one that you will touch on, I'll go with mine, which is the cornerback out of Ohio State, Damon Arnett, who went 19th overall. He went before, and I promise this is not bias on my part, he went before TCU corner Jeff Gladney. He went before, and here we go again, Auburn cornerback Noah Igbinoghene. I think I nailed that. We'll go with that. Over Jalen Johnson, over Trayvon Diggs, over Christian Fulton. And Christian Fulton was another guy I was considering putting in my value picks. All those corners, like, I think this was probably the deepest cornerback class we've had in the past couple years. Of that, you take like the number 7 rated corner in the first round? What are you doing? Like, if you're that, like, I understand a team falling in love with a guy and it's like, we cannot let him fall to another team. Well, then just trade your first round pick for an early second round pick. And just like, it's just, there were so much smarter ways to go about this than what the Raiders did. It's a very, if I'm not a Raiders fan, so I'm not, you know, that concerned about it. But if I was, I'd be very worried about the way this front office is showing the way they go about drafting and free agency and everything, because they're just totally confusing.
Yeah, and let's transition into the other reach pick that Tad was sort of alluding to that I have. Henry Ruggs at 12th overall. I mean, we talked about this with CeeDee Lamb, where there was argument between top three receivers, Henry Ruggs, Jerry Jeudy, CeeDee Lamb. But for Henry Ruggs to be the first one, it was hard for me to believe that one as a speed guy. I mean, I understand you're starting the Las Vegas era. This is an homage pick to Al Davis sort of thing. Like, maybe that was the reasoning behind it, but... Here's a list of receivers that ran the 40 at the NFL Combine since 1999, which is the first year that they did electronic timing, and these are their career stats, and I mean, it's not going to be good. So, first you got John Ross, 2017. He's been playing for 3 years. 49 receptions, 716 yards, 10 touchdowns. Now, a lot of that came in his third year, his most recent year, so I mean, maybe he's trending up, but it took a while for him to get going. J.J. Nelson in 2015, he's been playing for 5 years, 85 receptions, 1,475.
I forgot about J.J. Nelson. That's a throwback right there.
Yeah. 85 receptions, 1,475 receiving yards, and 11 touchdowns. So not the greatest numbers over the course of 5 years. Marquise Goodwin in 2013, 7 years still going on. He probably has the most consistent stats with 140 receptions, 2,323 yards with 13 touchdowns, but it was that fifth year when he was with San Francisco that he finally started to break up. Jacoby Ford has been not so good. Darius Hayward-Bey. Yaman Figgers, Jerome Mathis. Here's a name for you. Rondell Menendez in 1999. He played 2 years. Here's a fun fact. No recorded stats.
What?
He tore his ACL in the preseason, and he never played a down in the NFL, tried to catch on in NFL Europe. That didn't work out either. And, yeah, totally burnout. So, I mean, these receivers that are speedy guys are good, but they're not your premier receiver. So I'm just surprised that they drafted him. They got a lot of mouths to feed with Jason Witten, Darren Waller, Hunter Renfro, Tyrell Williams, excuse me. Other rookies, Brian Edwards, Lynn Bowden. So, I mean, just overall, just I wasn't happy with this pick at number 12.
No, you brought up who this reminded me of, actually, because the second this pick got announced, I was like, this is Darius Hayward-Bey all over again. It was a really fast guy who, you know, you could see going in the first round. If he did in the later picks, it wouldn't surprise you. But, like, going that early, everyone was like, what is going on? Because here's the thing. Like you said, you had Jerry Jeudy, CeeDee Lamb, again with the pronunciations, Brandon Ayuk? I think I'm pronouncing
Brandon Ayuk.
Yeah. Ayuk? Okay.
Ayuk, yeah.
Oh, man, people, I am so sorry. all those guys I consider better than Ruggs. And then you look at the 2009 draft where they drafted Darius Hayward-Bey, 7th overall. He went before Michael Crabtree, Jeremy Maclin, Percy Harvin, Hakeem Nicks, Kenny Britt. Like, again, none of those guys are really, like, stars. But I think you could easily argue all the first-round receivers that went after Hayward-Bey had objectively more successful careers.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, hands down. Moving along, next reach pick that I have is at 27th overall, Jordan Brooks with the Seattle Seahawks. Now, there was a rumor going around after Seattle chose Jordan Brooks that Cincinnati was interested in him at number 33 overall. But, I mean, still, for me, he's a promising prospect. He's definitely built like a prototypical NFL linebacker, but I just think that at that position, they could have drafted a few other players to fill in bigger holes as opposed to inside linebacker. I mean, he's got first-round talent, but he lacks pass coverage skills, had hard time shedding some blocks at the college level. I mean, now you're getting to the NFL level. It's going to be that much harder to do that. So he's definitely a more of a prospect in a first-round draft position as opposed to drafting a guy later that you know needs some more work. So a little bit surprising there. As mentioned, they have bigger holes like pass rush, offensive line, another weapon, because, I mean, DK Metcalf is going to break out, but Tyler Lockett's sort of getting down to, you know, the twilight of his career. He's getting injured a lot. I mean, he's still productive, but they could be looking for a guy to start training under him to eventually take over his spot. So, I mean, some guys that were still on the board at the time that Jordan Brooks' selection, Isaiah Wilson's a promising offensive lineman. T. Higgins, Michael Pittman Jr., Denzel Mims, promising receivers. As far as pass rushers, you got Yetur Gross-Matos, A.J. Epenesa, as mentioned. Offensive lineman, Isaiah Wilson, as mentioned. Josh Jones, like you said. Robert Hunt. And Ezra Cleveland is a solid offensive tackle out of Boise State. So, I mean, I understand possibly why they made the move. They want to replace KJ Wright, save some cash down the future, but overall, I just wasn't happy with this pick. So, I mean, what are your thoughts on Jordan Brooks?
It reminded me a lot of the Rashad Penny pick.
Yeah.
In terms of, I can see why you did it. It fits a need. It may not be your most immediate need, but why now? Like, you could have just waited for it. It just, like, and again, this is why we talked about this during the Jamal Adams segment, is I'm almost glad the Seahawks are giving up draft picks, because it's just like you don't know what to do with them. So, yeah, so give them up. No, you know, get what you know you're getting, and, you know, leave it up to a smarter front office, because this is another pick that just made no sense to me. It's consistently the Seahawks and the Raiders where I'm, you know, driving home from after watching the first round of the draft going, what were they thinking there? And I know Rashad Penny looked, you know, or has looked promising, but again, it's all about the value. People don't understand that. You could have gotten Rashad Penny in the second round. So it's really important for the Seahawks to start recognizing the value, and unfortunately, I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon.
Yeah, makes a ton of sense. And then just last pick that I want to get to as far as reaches. I know Green Bay Packers fans gave a lot of, you know, flack for Jordan Love going in the first round, but their second round pick I didn't feel was any better. A.J. Dillon, he's a dependable runner, 2 1,500-yard rushing seasons back at Boston College, but, you know, I saw lots of fourth-round grades, and he was taken in the second round, so he's a good runner, but no skills in the passing game. So, I mean, in today's NFL game, you need to be versatile both at running the ball as well as catching the ball in the backfield. So, I mean, definitely draft it for the future. I bet Jordan Love, A.J. Dillon, that's going to be the backfield for the next, you know, decade possibly with Matt LaFleur. That's the offense that he wants to implement. But, yeah, just I wasn't happy with this pick. There were some better picks that they could have taken. They could have filled some holes at inside linebacker. They let Blake Martinez walk in the offseason. They could have taken Willie Gay Jr., who was taken just a pick later. Logan Wilson was a solid pick. I mean, they need to get a wide receiver for him. They could have drafted Bryan Edwards. I mean, so just overall wasn't happy with A.J. Dillon. But I know, Tad, you had some comments on A.J. Dillon. You weren't so happy with me calling him a reach.
It's tough for me to put in words, which I know is a just great phrase for an auditory medium. But I get it. Because Aaron Jones obviously had a great year last year with just over 1,000 yards rushing, 16 rushing touchdowns. He had 68 targets, 49 receptions. Like, Aaron Jones proved himself to be a reliable weapon. But, you know, the last Packers running back where everyone was like, hey, this guy looks pretty good. It was Eddie Lacy in 2013 when he had over 1,100 yards, more than Aaron Jones had, 11 rushing touchdowns, slightly less, and everyone was like, oh, well, the Packers found their back of the future. Like, I don't trust Aaron Jones or Jamal Williams because I know everyone's going to go, well, Jamal Williams is a great complimentary piece. Yeah, sure, but I'd much rather have a good rookie over Jamal Williams any day of the week. So I understand the need for LaFleur to say, let me find a good running back to put with Aaron Rodgers. And like you said, with Jordan Love, like I got my quarterback in the future. If that was the right decision, that's up for debate. But I have my quarterback for the future. Let's get my running back for the future. Let's let him learn behind Aaron Jones. And worst case scenario, great. Aaron Jones kills it for the next 3 or 4 years, and we talked about this with the Derrick Henry contract. Running backs are not sustainable. It's just not a thing. So if Aaron Jones ends up being the running back of the future, you know what the future in quotes means? Next 3 years at best, and then he's going to start declining. So what's the harm in having a good rookie learn behind him this year and then continue to develop and then eventually take over the starting role?
No, those are fair points, but I think just obviously Matt LaFleur, I think, is just a little bit reluctant to let Aaron Jones free, as so many people have claimed on Twitter during the course of last season as far as fantasy players are concerned. So, yeah, we'll see what happens, but I think he wants to implement that power running scheme next couple of years, go with A.J. Dillon, and Aaron Jones may become a casualty, but yeah.
Well, and that's another thing, like you said, is you saw the success. Yeah, LaFleur is a Sean McVay guy. You saw the success Gurley had as long as Gurley stays healthy in there. I see a lot of the similarities between Dylan's play style and Gurley's play style. There's a bunch of Twitter hate headed my way. But I think that's why he did it, is because he said, I can make something out of this.
Yeah, that's very true. So let's just close out the segment, just, you know, going through some late round and undrafted value picks. We'll just sort of zoom right through this. Who do you got?
Obviously, as we've stated before, I'm a huge Colts fan. I have to go Jacob Eason in the fourth round. That's a great idea. Like, he showed a lot of promise. I don't think he's going to end up being the starter, but the fourth round pick, man. You know, throw the dart at the board. If the quarterback ends up being really good, learn behind Phillip Rivers, and Jacob Eason somehow ends up being the quarterback of the future for the Colts, I'm going to love it.
That's a solid pick. That's a solid pick. Couple of mine, I got John Runyon Jr. drafted in the sixth round, 192nd overall.
Great pick. Great pick.
I don't think he'll be a starter right away. He was listed as offensive tackle, but I'm pretty sure they'll move him to guard. His father played in the league for a long time, mainly for the Eagles, but also the Orioles and Chargers. Yeah, I think the interior of the Green Bay Packers offensive line is pretty weak, so John Runyon definitely has the skills to eventually become a starter. As mentioned, COVID sort of throws a wrench into things, but it would surprise me if he wins a starting job in 2021. Let's stick it with LAFB Network. I got KJ Hill in the seventh round, 222nd overall. Left Ohio State as a school leader in receptions with 201. The third receiver in the Chargers offense is a little bit up for debate. I mean, there's not a lot of depth there, not a lot of competition. KJ Hill is really good at catching the ball, which most receivers are, but he's also excellent at route running. So I think he could easily carve out a slot position role, move Keenan Allen back out to the outside, and become the third string wide receiver, excuse me, and win a job as a seventh round pick. And then the last one, undrafted, Darrell Williams for the Kansas City Chiefs. The Chiefs' strong points are their tackles, but similar to the Packers, their interior offensive line is terrible. Darrell Williams could step in. Austin Ryder is playing in a contract year. He has had problems with penalties, holding calls, just hasn't looked as efficient as their center. Darrell Williams could slip in as a center or possibly at either guard position. His stock ended up slipping. That's why he went undrafted, because COVID-19 canceled the Mississippi State Pro Day. But yeah, Darrell Williams, similar to John Runyon Jr., it's got the skills to be a strong offensive lineman. May not be like one of the premier offensive linemen in the league, but he'll definitely be an everyday starter. So, Tad, do you got any more value picks besides Jacob Eason?
I mean, honestly, like I said, I'm the most excited for Jacob Eason, but I think Tyler Johnson, he is a wide receiver from Minnesota who went to the Buccaneers in the fifth round. I think with Tom Brady in Tampa Bay now, he could really have a breakout year. I think that was a great value pick. And you got to remember, the last receiver from Minnesota, Eric Decker, he had a pretty solid NFL career. They could be building something there. And then my final one, and I will admit another fandom of mine, is I'm a diehard Michigan fan. So I could not believe this guy slipped to the sixth round. Donovan Peoples-Jones to the Browns in the sixth round. I'm a little worried with Austin Hooper, Jarvis Landry, and Odell Beckham Jr. He could get buried on the depth chart. But I am still holding out hope that he can prove his talent in Cleveland. But regardless, that type of talent in the sixth round, if it's not in Cleveland, he's going to make a name for himself somewhere else.
Yeah, that's the big thing. And you never know. Maybe Odell Beckham will have another outburst and he'll be out of Cleveland. So
he'll kick another kicker's net and he'll just smack him in the face and he's out.
Exactly. Exactly. So we transition from the rookies that are possibly going to be breakout players, maybe some reaches. I mean, sorry to hit the same note on this record, but with COVID, you just don't know what's going to happen with all those rookies. So, you know, let's move into veteran players that, you know, had maybe disappointing seasons or are still emerging as players in the league that are going to break out. So, I mean, Ted, who do you think are going to be the breakout players of the 2020 season?
So my first candidate was a no-brainer. It was a guy that had an addition to his offense of probably the best receiver in football. It's Kyler Murray. You get the DeAndre Hopkins trade, which was a total steal for Arizona. And then we talked about this last week with the familiarity of a system being key to a quarterback's development with Dwayne Haskins. Because we talked, you know, are the Redskins going to disappoint? Is the Washington football team, sorry. Are they going to disappoint? Or are they going to, exceed expectations? And you said, well, he has this familiarity with the system. But the problem is, they just changed coordinators. Well, Murray still has Kingsbury. So I think there's that growing familiarity with Kingsbury's system with the addition of DeAndre Hopkins. And I think you have Larry Fitzgerald. And I know he's been a bit of a bus so far to some, but Christian Kirk I still think has a lot of talent, and the addition of Max Williams, who I've spoken endlessly on this podcast about my belief in Max Williams' talent. So you have all of that combined with, you look at their schedule, they play the Washington Football Club team, whatever, they play the Lions, and they got rid of Darius Slay, so their secondary is not all that fearsome anymore. You have Carolina. they really don't have anyone that scary either. The Jets, the Giants. So I think Murray is facing a plethora of pretty weak secondaries with the addition of DeAndre Hopkins. So I think Murray is going to have a breakout year. And I know I said this Cam Newton as well. Honestly, it would not surprise me if he was in the MVP discussion this next year. I think the Cardinals are going to be the surprise team of the 2020 season, assuming it plays out, you know, in the normal fashion, but we will see. My next pick is another quarterback in the AFC East, Drew Lock. I love Drew Lock, and I will admit I'm biased. I'm from Missouri, so any Mizzou quarterback that, you know, proves his worth, I'm down for. Chase Daniel, the dude's earned like $50 million being a backup quarterback. Like, that's amazing. That's the dream job right there. But you look at what Drew Lock did his rookie year with 7 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, and a 4-1 record. His one loss is against the Chiefs, so it's an understandable loss. A loss nonetheless, but an understandable one. And then you look at the additions the Broncos put on to their offense with Jerry Jeudy in the first round, KJ Hamler out of Penn State in the second round, and this is a doozy right here.
Albert O.
I dug my own grave there.
Yeah.
But that's the thing is, with all these growing two tight end systems, is you have him out of Mizzou, and I think he's a really talented player who could live up to his potential. And then people forget, the Broncos still have Jake Butt. Granted, he's had a lot of struggles with ACL injuries and everything, but if he can stay healthy, Jake Butt was being discussed as a first-round talent. So you basically have two very promising tight ends with two promising rookie receivers on top of the player that's already there in Cortland Sutton. And Cortland Sutton proved he can produce with any quarterback last year. So I think Drew Lock is primed for a breakout year this year. If he was in any other division, I would say he could lead his team to the division title. Unfortunately, they're in there with the Chiefs. Sorry, buddy. Mahomes is your $500 million man for a reason. My other players was T.J. Hockenson, the tight end with the Lions. He had the most yards by a rookie tight end in a debut week one last year with 131 and a touchdown. He really didn't do much after that, but he also wasn't targeted a whole lot. So I think if the offense just learns to really utilize him well, I think he can really break out. And it's also important to note that Matt Stafford only played 8 games last year. So if he has a consistent quarterback in the offense, I think he can really show up. The other three players I had, I'll go through these quickly. Austin Eckler with the Chargers. Obviously, Melvin Gordon's gone. He caught 92 passes last year, so he can make a huge difference. I don't care who's starting, if it's Justin Herbert or Tyrod or Telrod, however you pronounce it, Taylor. Either way, both of them add a certain dynamic to the offense that was clearly missing last year. And honestly, I think this is a boom or bust year for him. And when you see players in that type of situation, they tend to perform well. You look at guys like Derrick Henry of, hey, my contract's up, I'm going to kill it this year, pay me my money. So I think Eckler has a really good chance to break out this year. Darius Geis, obviously his rookie year was non-existent. He suffered an injury in the preseason, was not able to play at all. I thought of him as a first-round running back in last year's draft. So I'm very interested to see what he does. It obviously depends a lot on the carries that are split between him and Peterson. But if he does get his fair share of the workload, I believe that he can show up as a very solid running back in the NFL. And my final breakout player is Juan Thornhill. I know everyone's looking at me going, who the hell is Juan Thornhill? He was a great player for the Chiefs. I felt terrible for him. He did so well. He was the Chiefs' second-round pick last year, and he tore his ACL in the final week of the regular season. So, of course, when the Chiefs made the playoff run, he didn't get any of the recognition or anything. But he had 57 tackles, 3 interceptions, and a touchdown, along with 5 pass deflections. Like, that's a really good season for safety, let alone a rookie safety. So I think if he can stay healthy, the Chiefs have found themselves a star safety to keep going. This is what we talked about with the Jamal Adams situation. was, should the Chiefs trade for Jamal Adams? No, because Juan Thornhill is such a solid player that give him the opportunity to shine, and I think he will get that opportunity this year.
Yeah, so solid names there. I know you mentioned T.J. Hockenson. Forgive me if you mentioned this one already, but another possible breakout player is Noah Fant with Denver. Mm-hmm. Went to the same school, also drafted in the first round as well. So, I mean, yeah, very good Iowa tight ends there. Both looking
for... Noah Fant, Albert O, Jake Butt. That is a good tight end depth chart right there.
Yeah, Drew Lock has a very solid chance to break out. He's got the weapons. You know, Melvin Gordon, Phillip Lindsay. I mean, he's got the weapons. He's just got to put it all together there. So, very solid list. Going through my breakout players. Hate to be a homer here, but Jimmy Garoppolo. San Francisco. I'm going to give you some stats here for the first 24 starts of quarterbacks that have been under Kyle Shanahan. So Jimmy Garoppolo, 6,238 passing yards, 38 touchdowns, 21 picks, 67.48% completion percentage. Matt Ryan, 7,227 yards, 40 touchdowns, 20 picks, 67.19% completion percentage. Matt Schaub, 6,857 passing yards, 39 touchdowns, 23 interceptions, 67.41% completion percentage. And finally, Robert Griffin III, 5,650 yards, 32 passing touchdowns, 14 interceptions, 63.42% completion percentage. So there are some varying degrees as far as passing yardage. With the exception of Robert Griffin III, all of these quarterbacks are passing around 67% completion percentage, and the interceptions are around 20 or so. So, I mean, this is only the first 24 starts for Jimmy Garoppolo, and people forget that he's had only one full season, and that was last year. Took him to the Super Bowl, almost 1-1. So, I mean, he's got another year to learn under Kyle Shanahan. I think he's just going to skyrocket. I'm not going to say MVP in discussion here. There's so many other candidates there like that. But he can have a monumental leap similar to what Matt Ryan had in 2015. And then 2016, Matt Ryan won the MVP award. So I expect something like that. He's got a big chip on his shoulders. So many people are doubting him. He's got a ton of weapons. I mean, Debo Samuel, Kendrick Bourne, George Kittle. Trent Taylor was injured last year. He's going to come back and be healthy. Jalen Hurd was a high draft pick, but he got hurt last year. They signed Travis Benjamin from the Chargers in the offseason. Dante Pettis, hopefully he can break out again. And then you touched on him earlier, the rookie Brandon Ayuk. So, I mean... he's got the tools there. He's got the weapons. I think he can finally break out. Do you have any thoughts on Jimmy G?
So I know there was a lot of talk. Man, it seemed like basically just days after the Super Bowl of should the 49ers bring Tom Brady in? And should they, you know, I saw another rumor of should they trade Jimmy G to the Vikings and get Kirk Cousins back because that could be an upgrade. Do you think that affects his play? Do you think that kind of hurt his feelings or do you think he just kind of shrugs it off?
Well, they kept him in the conversation when they were discussing bringing in Tom Brady and possibly signing him, and Jimmy was completely fine with it, obviously, as to why they want to, you know, kick the tires on that situation. But, yeah, like I said, I think this puts a chip on his shoulder that it's like, hey, all these media members are doubting him, you know, possibly going after Tom Brady, possibly going after Kirk Cousins, like you said. I mean, there's all these things that are like saying that he's not the guy, he's not the guy, but he's got complete support from Kyle Shanahan, the head coach. He's got complete support from the GM, John Lynch, and all of his players are defending him every single time they see any sort of negative remark on social media. So, I mean, he's got full support, and I think he's just going to ride that into a successful season.
He just needs to learn how to hit George Kittle from 40 yards deep.
Yeah, and they drafted a blocking tight end in the draft, so I think George Kittle will be going out on a lot more passing yardage situations, passing routes. So moving into my next breakout pick, Jordan Howard with the Miami Dolphins. People forget, but he had back-to-back 1,000-yard rushing seasons in Chicago, and then he was only 65 yards short of doing it for three straight years. So, I mean, the guy is uber-talented. Unfortunately, with the ascension of Tariq Cohen, he just wasn't fitting in Matt Nagy's system, as a lot of people had hoped he would. Traded him to Philadelphia. He was effective there, but Philadelphia runs a very running-back-by-committee approach. He also injured his shoulder halfway through the season. Signs with Miami in the offseason. I mean, I think he has a very good chance to replicate his days in Chicago. Quick question for you here, Tad. Who led the Miami Dolphins in rushing yards last season?
Fitzpatrick.
That is correct. I was surprised.
Yes!
That
one. Yes!
Ryan Fitzpatrick with 243 yards and 4 touchdowns. So he led in both categories. I mean, if that doesn't say that Jordan Howard is going to come in and hopefully alleviate all that, I mean, I don't know what else will. They did also trade with San Francisco. They acquired Matt Breida, but the one thing about Matt Breida is that while he was effective as a runner, a pure home run threat, he also dealt with a lot of nagging ankle injuries. So, I mean, while they may share the backfield, Jordan Howard may get more touches because he'll be healthier longer and be able to, you know, be on the field effectively. And then the last thing I want to bring up about Jordan Howard is Chan Gailey's coming back as offensive coordinator. And he's been so instrumental in setting up so many good running games. He's coached Ryan Fitzpatrick, so he has that familiarity there back in Buffalo. He's coached the likes of Jerome Bettis back in Pittsburgh, Emmitt Smith in Dallas, Derman Thomas in Miami. Yeah, it's a shell of his career, but still, Derman Thomas. He helped CJ Spiller break out in his rookie year in Buffalo, Matt Forte in New York, gave Chris Ivory a 1,000-yard season in New York as well, Fred Jackson with Buffalo, Larry Johnson, and Jamal Charles with Kansas City. So, I mean, he's coached a lot of great players. He could definitely help that with Jordan, Jordan Howard and become a better running back in that system. So, thoughts on Jordan Howard?
I completely agree with that pick. Two things. One, great throwback to Larry Johnson in Kansas City. That's bringing up great childhood memories right there. Also, the fact that I got that right, I'm going to Vegas, baby. I'm right in this streak.
Take that to the bank. The last one I just want to get to is Devin Bush, the linebacker with the Pittsburgh Steelers. He had a solid year last year. I think he had over 100 combined tackles. He was the leader of that linebacking crew in Pittsburgh, but you could see definitely the inexperience in the first handful of games. He was constantly getting called for penalties as far as holding and just not being in the right place at the right time. Towards the end of the season, I mean, after that bye week, Pittsburgh won 6 of their first 7 games after that bye week. Part of the reason was because Devin Bush got a chance to, you know, breathe and really just take in the system. Like you said, similar with Baltimore, it's like you get this impression that when you're drafted in Pittsburgh, you have to be good on defense. It's just like automatic. So maybe it was some of that pressure, but he looked a lot better as the season went on. Almost helped them clinch a playoff spot. It was a little closer. They lost Javon Hargrave, who was a good defensive lineman as far as the run as well as the pass. So Devin Bush is going to have to step up and make sure that he's playing the right schemes and filling in the right gaps because Javon Hargrave is not there to bail him out anymore. He's also on a great defense. Bud Dupree, Minka Fitzpatrick, T.J. Watt, Cameron Hayward. So, I mean, the forefront's not all on him. It's, if anything, it's on T.J. Watt and Minka Fitzpatrick since they traded a first-round pick to acquire Fitzpatrick. So, I mean, he doesn't have to deal with being the focal point of the defense. He could just, you know, do his job, worry about the little things just concerned with his position, and let everybody else take the spotlight away from him. So, just, you got any thoughts on Devin Bush?
No, like you said, I think that was a great value pick at the time in last year's draft. And as I previously say, I'm a huge Michigan fan, so I'm a big believer in Devin Bush. So I think it was very worth the Steelers trading up, but this is also a very boom or bust type of year for him. If he does not perform this year, he's going to find himself in some hot water. But I am optimistic, as you are, that he can really perform. And also, people have to remember that with Roethlisberger returning this year, I think it's going to bring back a much more stable environment that the Steelers were sorely lacking last year. So
that's very true.
So I think that is a very good pick for a breakout player.
Yeah. Just like you said, Ben Roethlisberger coming back hopefully gives their offense more stability so the defense doesn't have to bail the team out every single
week.
Which
they had to do constantly. That's why, that's why Minka Fitzpatrick was in the Defensive Player of the Year conversation because he constantly was just in, you know, red zone situations where you had to be picking off the quarterbacks just to make sure they didn't score. It was totally unfair to the defense. I'm not even a Steelers fan, and you can tell how upset I am about it.
Joe Hayden had a bit of a zombie year, as I like to call it, because he came back from the dead and he performed well. So, I mean, yeah, that's definitely going to be a better defense heading into 2020. Let's talk about some players that are going to regress. So, I mean, Ted, who do you got as players that are going to disappoint as far as just won't be able to replicate what they did in 2019 or maybe in just previous seasons as well?
This is going to make our LAFB fans happy. My first pick is Jared Goff. Look, I was never a big believer in Goff. I think he was drafted first overall purely for the value of the quarterback, not the value of his play. And I think we saw the first time where if McVay does not have the perfect system around him, and by system I mean personnel and basically situation, just how fast that Goff can collapse. He had a career-high 16 interceptions last year. And I think this is a key part that people forget is you look at Cooper Kupp, who had, you know, the season-ending knee injury two seasons ago, and he played really, really well, but Kupp just hasn't looked the same since then. So I think you're kind of missing Kupp's dynamic ability. You also looked at, if you look at the advanced statistics, the Rams really depend heavily on the play action. That's where Goff succeeds the most. Play action is not going to work if you don't fear the run. And if you look at the Rams running back depth chart, I'm not fearing anyone there. It's like we talked about last week. That's why they should trade for Mostert, because at least it adds a little something to your depth chart. So I think Goff is going to be struggling this year. Their first three opponents are Dallas, who we talked about, beefed up their secondary with the addition of Diggs. Philadelphia, who added Darius Slay, and then Buffalo with Tre'Davious White. Like, those are some tough, tough defenses to start your season against. I don't think the Rams are going to be that good this year. I see, like, 8-8 at best. And another thing, if you look at the depth of receivers, because people are going to go, well, Kupp is still good, Robert Woods is still good, Josh Reynolds is still good. Well, that's great. Well, if one of them goes down? Their backup receivers are Nsemba Webster, Van Jefferson, and Greg Dortch. I wish I could tell you more about them, but my bet is you couldn't either.
Yeah, yeah, it's going to be interesting in Los Angeles for the Rams, breaking in that new stadium as well. But, moving into one of my regression players, Gardner Minshew. I know we had Minshew Mania last year, and it was the reason why the Jaguars decided to move on from Nick Foles, but part of me feels that now that he's going to be the starter, teams are going to be prepared for him. And heading into 2020, they'll just know that this is the guy as the starter, as opposed to possibly preparing for Nick Foles. Are they preparing for Minshew? It's just like, don't know which guy who you're preparing for. The AFC South will be tougher. I mean, we touched on this last episode, where just the Jaguars play the AFC North and the NFC North. I mean, those are two tough divisions with Cleveland and Baltimore and Green Bay and Minnesota. I mean, there's lots of tough teams that are not going to be as easy for Gardner Minshew to, you know, get past. And one of the things that he was able to rack up all his stats was because they're playing behind the whole time. Their defense is not that great. I mean, they lost a lot of key pieces. Calais Campbell, as mentioned, went to Baltimore. Marcell Dareus is no longer there. Jalen Ramsey was traded away. And then they drafted rookies to replace them, which is great, but I mean, with COVID, it's hard to say just if those rookies are going to be able to replicate that sort of play this season. So, I mean, the change of John DeFilippo to Jay Gruden is going to be adjusting. That's going to be hard to understand and just make that transition as well with everything going on right now. So, I mean, yeah, I don't have as high hopes for Minshew Mania to run rampant in 2020. What do you think, Tad?
Here's my problem is, can you really count a player as regressing or disappointing when your expectations are already so low for him?
That is fair.
Like, is anyone really going into the season and be like, he's gonna do really well? Like, no one's really expecting him to do well. No one's expecting Jack. I totally bailed on a sentence there. Nobody is expecting the Jacksonville Jaguars to do well this year. Every mock draft I looked at for the 2021 NFL draft has the Jacksonville Jaguars taking Lawrence first overall. So I agree. I don't think he's going to do that well, but I also find it hard to count him as a regression player when expectations are so low. This is the equivalent of saying, like, I don't know, Daniel Jones isn't going to do that great. Because if anyone's expecting Daniel Jones, oh, I should have included him. Well, I won't go into depth with him, but yeah, if anyone's expecting Daniel Jones to really kill it this year, then lower those expectations.
That's fair. That's fair. But, you know, They obviously trade away Nick Foles, so they're expecting something out of Gardner Minshew.
That was
so,
a cash dump. Yeah, maybe. That was a cash dump. That wasn't for Minshew. That was a cash dump. They want to clear up as much cap as they can to rebuild the roster.
That's true. And yeah, maybe this is just, you know, behind the curtain. They're looking to revamp the entire front office to just start new in 2021 with the new quarterback, with the new head coach, all that stuff. Possibly no Leonard Fournette either. So yeah, completely understand everything you said. But yeah, I'm putting him in that regression player sort of profile. So who else do you got as far as regression players?
So my next player was tough because I was, again, I know I just nailed you for this, but it's like, where is his expectations really? Was Derek Carr. Because, I mean, man, you want to talk about just like perfectly mediocre. Look at Derek Carr's stats for the past few years. He always finishes in the 20-25 touchdown range, the, you know, 7-15 interception range. Like, he's just perfectly mediocre. But here's the thing. This is the first year the Raiders are in Las Vegas. They just added Henry Ruggs, which we talked about was pretty overvalued, but still the hype's there. Like, this is, you know, this is basically a new franchise. We need to see you show up. And I don't really think he's going to. Other than Josh Jacobs, offense is good, not great. You have Tyrell Williams, who's solid. You have Hunter Renfro, who's solid. You have Darren Waller, who's, say it with me, solid. Like, it's just, yeah, no, it's just like, it's just basically you have the most mediocre offense ever going into the season. And then you also have Marcus Mariota nipping at his heels. And you can clearly tell this is Mariota trying to do what Tannehill did in Tennessee. You're a bust somewhere, you go somewhere else where you have a solid shot at coming in halfway through the season and then killing it. So I think that pressure gets to him. I don't think Carr has what it takes. If you look at his game logs, he consistently finishes one touchdown, no interceptions against like okay to bad teams, and then teams against the Chiefs and everything else, it's usually one or two touchdowns with at least two or three picks. He's just not that good. I think this is Carr's last year as a full starter.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. And, you know, the reason that they signed Marcus Mariota is probably they hope that it'll either A, bring out the best in Derek Carr, or B, now they got a replacement for him in case he's not performing as well. So, yeah, very good candidate for regression. My next one is Marcus Mariota's former teammate, A.J. Brown. He had a solid rookie year last year, but in the playoffs, I mean, I know it was the Derrick Henry show for a majority of the Tennessee Titans playoff run, but you still would hope that he would get a lot of targets because he performed so well down the stretch of 2019. Only 10 targets, 5 receptions, 64 yards, and no touchdowns in the entire playoff run. So heading into 2020, he's now going to be the primary receiver, quote-unquote, similar to Minshew. He's going to get more attention on him, and overall, just the 2019 split, if you look at it for the Tennessee Titans, they're 50% run, 50% pass. So, I mean, they're not going to be passing a ton. We mentioned this in the last episode. Ryan Tannehill is more of a game manager as opposed to a guy that you put the entire offense on your back and lead this offense to wins. I mean, that's more what Derrick Henry is. That's why he got paid. So Derrick Henry is going to be the focal point of this offense. And if you look at receivers that, you know, had less than 60 receptions but went over 1,000 yards, there's very few of them. I mean, you got A.J. Brown last year. You also got Mike Williams last year. But then besides that, it's just been DeSean Jackson. And I mean, DeSean Jackson's great, but it just hasn't been replicated year in and year out, where it's hard for me to see that A.J. Brown can do that same thing coming into year two, especially as mentioned, the number one receiver. Have question marks still on Corey Davis. No Delaney Walker anymore, so they're depending on Jonnu Smith, an unproven tight end. So it's just a lot of question marks, and if everybody's going to be putting all their attention on A.J. Brown, just I don't think you'll be able to replicate such a good season. What do you think?
I agree. It was funny because I was hoping to hit you with a double whammy when I saw that he was your pick with, like, well, he didn't do that great last year. Like, how can expectations be that high? And I looked up his stats. I was like, oh, wow, he really did do well last year. 52 catches, just over 1,050 yards with 8 receiving touchdowns. That is a great rookie year for a receiver. People forget rookie receivers take a while to adapt in the NFL. It really is probably the toughest position to transition from college to the pros. So I was shocked. And then when I saw those stats, I basically agreed with everything you said. Was, okay, I can totally see how this takes a step back. Which leads me into, and Titan fans are going to love us after this, my next disappointing player, which is Derrick Henry. I think this kind of sums up our, I don't mean to, you know, speak for you, but I think this kind of sums up our entire thoughts on the Titans. It's not so much that they're going to suck, it's just that, will they live up to the sky-high expectations of being the AFC Championship last year? Because I don't think Derrick Henry is going to finish under 1,000 yards, barring any injury. If he plays a full season, he's going to have another solid season. But I think people are expecting Derrick Henry to have, connecting to another Titans running back, a Chris Johnson, CJ2K type season, where he just kills it and he's MVP. Did Chris Johnson win MVP that year?
That's what we'll have to look up.
He was borderline. He was borderline. Notice how, yeah, I avoided saying it outright to avoid that fine. But I think a lot of people are expecting Derrick Henry to become basically the next Adrian Peterson. And I'm just not entirely sure he's capable of doing that. So I think Derrick Henry will have a solid season, but given the contract he just got and given his playoff performance last year, I think a solid season is going to be seen as many as disappointing. And like you said, you can't lean on Tannehill. The Titans' entire offensive scheme is going to be trying to cover up their weakness quarterback, which is why that contract to Tannehill was just so massively stupid. But again, they're in the AFC South. I'm a Colts fan. I'm not complaining. So, hey. But I think he also lacks that motivation now that he has the contract. Like I said earlier in this episode, when players are in the contract year, they tend to play better to get that money. He got the money. It's gone. That motivation is gone. I'm seeing Henry is finishing around 1,300 yards and maybe 8 touchdowns.
Very reasonable. And I had to look it up. So Chris Johnson won Player of the Year that year in 2009, but Peyton Manning was actually the MVP of that season. So good job. Good job not hedging your bets.
Wait, was that Manning's? That was he wasn't with the Broncos then yet.
No, that was still with the Colts.
That was still with the Colts. Yeah. Wow, good for Manning. It's almost as if he's the greatest of all time.
Yeah, almost. Moving into my last regression candidate, Shaq Barrett. Similar to A.J. Brown, he's going to head into 2020 with extra attention. There's been only two players in the history of sacks being recorded as an official stat that had back-to-back sack leaders in the league. So those two are Mark Gastineau and Reggie White. So you can see that the sack leaders in the league is always changing. Will he still be effective? Yes, but there's no way that he's going to replicate his 19.5 sacks that he had last season. And also, if you look over the course of his entire career, he had 14 sacks total in 5 years, and then all of a sudden he exploded for 19.5 in just one season. So part of me is thinking that's a fluke. One of the reasons probably why he only got a franchise tag as opposed to a full contract. So I think even Tampa Bay is thinking like, okay, let's see you do it again. And they have a hard schedule. They play against some tough teams that don't allow a lot of sacks. They play, surprisingly, the Raiders, the Falcons, the Lions, the Bears, the Giants. These are all teams that don't allow a good number of sacks, either because of good line play or just the quarterback is smart enough to get rid of the ball. So, I mean, I just don't see his numbers being as high. I think Tampa Bay will obviously rely more on the offense as opposed to the defense this year. So, Shaq Barrett, regression candidate, what are your thoughts?
I completely agree with that, especially because you see all these guys that spike in their sack numbers and the next year they plummet, mostly because the reason they spiked was because teams didn't take them seriously, so it was one-on-one blocking. And now that teams are like, oh no, he can actually, you know, get to the quarterback, that's when they start focusing on the double teams and they really start scheming towards that one player, which is why guys like, you know, J.J. Watt, when he's healthy, Chandler Jones and other guys that consistently get double-digit sacks, that's why they get the money. But I'm right there with you. I from what we've seen so far, I don't think Shaq Barrett can put up with the extra attention he's more than likely going to get this season.
Agreed. So, yeah, 2020 is going to be an interesting NFL season. Maybe some of these regression candidates become breakout candidates. Maybe some of the breakout candidates become regression candidates. Who knows? But, you know, we're interested in this 2020 season, you know, ready for it. All right, so I mean, covered a lot of good topics. I mean, not a lot of topics, but two pretty big topics. You know, draft, reaches, and value picks. Same thing with the veterans, just breakout and regression candidates. Covered a lot of players. I mean, as mentioned, who knows what's going to happen. But, Tad, how'd you feel about today's episode?
As always, I felt great about it. I think we killed it, and I cannot wait to get started next week on some new projects.
Yes, so thank you for leading me into that. So we got a big project coming for you guys next week. Me and Tad, we're going to break down every single division in the league. We're going to post an episode for 8 straight days going from the NFC West, finishing with, you know, AFC South probably, I don't know, but 8 straight days, we're going to get a division dive for each division, go over just, you know, breakout players, who's going to rank where, projected records, everything, you name it, we're going to go over it. Tad, I'm super excited about that project.
I cannot wait to get started. And as always, we always have to thank Ryan Dyrud and the LAFB Network, our parent company, for giving us this opportunity. Guys, please follow them on Twitter, Facebook, and check out their website at lafbnetwork.com. You can also check me out at TadDecide94 on Twitter. Amir, give it a shout out.
Yeah, definitely can hit us up on Twitter. And yes, you can find me at UmberTheSide23. Big shout out to Ryan. Thank you so much for giving us this opportunity. And that will conclude today's episode. It was a bit longer than the previous ones, but loaded with content. We appreciate you guys tuning in the whole way through. And yeah, definitely tune in next week as we got those division dives right on the horizon. So take care. Thank you again for listening.
Albert Oakley Zenon.
Got it!